Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Well, the Flames are back at home, and always I'm Dan alongside Matt to discuss the Flames. But this week, we have a call-up from the farm. We brought Mike Gold up from Daily Faceoff and Flames Nation. Mike's a longtime friend of the show. Mike, we're glad you cleared waivers and you could join us this week.
Hey, you know what? I'm just glad I was finally recalled.
We were worried that the Oilers podcast might claim you off waivers just to spite us.
Yeah, no, I don't think I'd report.
No.
There you go.
You have standards. That's always a good thing.
That's right.
That's right.
I've always wondered
right.
If there's any guy that doesn't report in the KHL and traded to the Siberia team. Like, you've been exiled.
Yeah. And go to play Hunter Shinkarik's team in Nizhnikomsk.
Bless you.
That's where he's playing these days. He's still playing.
Okay. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of guys over there would be surprised they're playing.
Yep.
You know what else we were surprised by? A big 6-2 win by the Flames over the Panthers this week. Dubé had 2 goals, 2 assists. Vladar made 31 saves for the Flames. Matt, why don't you start with your thoughts on this game?
Well, after criticizing a bunch of players last week quite heavily on our show, guys like Dylan Dubé and Andrew Mangiapane definitely stepped up this week, especially in the first and last game. And it was good to see that the Flames were not allowing Matthew Tkachuk to even start anything. Like, he poked Zadorov and flipped the puck at him, and Zadorov's like, cool. So, you know,
Mike,
nice try.
Mike, were you worried that Tkachuk might go out there and be the pest that we know and love?
I was a little bit more worried about him, and I guess they're sort of correlate because when Tkachuk is the pest, he's sometimes on. Sometimes when he's the pest, he's distracted and he kind of loses his ability to make a difference. We saw that in the playoffs, I think, against Dallas, even at times where he was getting into those little personal battles, like with guys like John Klingberg, and he sort of would lose his effectiveness. But Tkachuk, I thought, had a really good game. I thought he did, even though he didn't score. I thought he was their most dangerous player on Florida. But Dan Vladar was great. He was fantastic. It was the best goaltending performance we had seen to that point all season long. And yeah, Mangiapane, I haven't really been as worried about Mangiapane. I mean, I think a lot of his struggles actually lately have been exacerbated by Nazem Kadri, who I really like. I just think he hasn't been himself a little bit, and hopefully he can pull out of that. But Vladar has been terrific, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but he was great again yesterday too, and we'll talk about him a little bit more. And yeah, Dubé and Mangiapane coming through. Mangiapane, I mean, there are guys who say, you know, who bring up the idea that he's not a 20-goal guy. He's just a guy who scored 20 goals. And I don't know, man. Like, he can shoot the puck so well. You even look at it. Before he scored 35, he was scoring at a 20-goal pace easily those two seasons. You know, they were just shortened seasons. So I'm not worried about
him. I think
at
this
all.
Game showed that he still got it in him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those where for a lot of the games, you can see him trying too hard to force plays instead of just organically letting things develop, and we started to see, like, now that he's actually getting pucks in, that especially in the Washington game, he was very relaxed in that game and just doing his game, and he scored a pair. So it'll be interesting to see if he can get on a bit of a roll now that sort of the monkey's off his back.
And don't forget about elite scorer Brett Ritchie, who also got a goal here, the guy who's seventh on the team in goals right now.
Yeah, hey.
Just as we all penciled in.
That's right.
Yeah.
Who needs another winger on this team when you got Brett Ritchie in the wings?
He's doing just fine. I'm happy with Brett Ritchie. I think last year I was a little bit skeptical of him. I thought his numbers, he had very strong underlying numbers last year, even though it took him a long time to score. I was skeptical. I thought he was maybe, you know, I thought they didn't really paint the picture of what he was doing. But this year he has been, I think, their least offensive bottom six player. And that's not intended as an indictment at all. I think he's been, frankly, underpaid for what he brings. I think he's been pretty good.
That sounds like a t-shirt someone needs for their beer league game. The least offensive bottom six player.
Well, you know what I mean. I mean, and I shouldn't even say bottom six because the Backlund line is in the bottom six technically too. And so, yeah, I think their fourth line, I've had some quibbles with it, but I think Brett Ritchie has done his job pretty well.
Yeah, the whole fourth line, other than Richie, and it, like even extending to Trevor Lewis, has been marginal. Satisfactory for a fourth line if you're not really caring too much about having a fourth line that's effective.
But, yeah, no kidding.
You know, but it's like, you need some bodies out there, and at least they can hit, so I guess. But yeah, they're not great.
The second game this week was another return from a former Flame. Sean Monahan and the Montreal Canadiens came to town, and despite a 46-19 shot total in the Flames' favor, they ended up dropping this one 2-1. I'll give my thoughts to start with here. I thought that the Flames got better as this game went on, but they just weren't opportunistic enough. I think they were the better team on the ice. They just need to take better chances and you know, make the best of those chances. And I thought much better defensive game than we saw in the Florida game here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, it's one of those where, you know, the team overall is not confident, and you can kind of see that at times where, like, they're rushing plays a little bit, or just not allowing them to develop quite properly to get themselves into the proper scoring positions, and, you know, kind of like forcing shots instead of, you know, taking a second to maybe set up a pass, or, you know, just a little out of sync. And it didn't help the adventures of Jacob Markstrom in the first minute, but, you know, I think if you play this game 10 times over, that this is the only one where Montreal gets points. It's just, it is what it is, unfortunately.
Yeah, that Markstrom play was, it was a deflating play. That was a Mike Smith caliber play, and it just happens from a goaltender. You could see the Flames, after it happened, were just saying, what are we supposed to do now? And that's sort of, it just felt like a game that had almost felt like it was slipping away within the first 20 seconds. It just kind of had that feeling to it. I thought they had some dangerous looks. Obviously, they got the goal. The goaltending for Montreal, Jake Allen, was very good. He made some very, very impressive saves. It just was one of those games. I don't think it's the kind of game that you draw many big conclusions from.
No.
But it is the kind of game where I think they needed more skilled finishers, which is an overarching problem, but ultimately it's not the kind of game that makes or breaks your season, certainly.
Do you guys
not
think it'd be fair to say this is probably the first game this year where an opposing goaltender stole a game from the Flames?
I don't know if it's the first, but
no, I would definitely say that he stole it, but I'm not sure it's the only one this year.
The Flames played too hard in this to walk away without a point.
Mm-hmm.
I was just glad to see Sean Monahan getting a couple points. The reason that I bought Matt's tickets to go to this game was to see Sean Monahan play. It wasn't so much to see the Flames play. I was just happy to see him do well. And
of all the guys that left in the offseason, I think he's probably the one that the fan base still has the most appreciation for.
Oh, by a mile. Yeah. By a mile.
The Flames, well, you could kind of tell that, like, nobody was upset by him in general, and we're basically like, this is a hockey move, but it sucks because we like you still, where the other two kind of opinions changed.
There wasn't a boo in the building.
No, and even Monty was getting emotional before and after the game when talking to the media. Like he said, sitting down in the media, seeing, you know, familiar faces, it was, you could tell that he was very emotional for this one too.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, if he ever wanted to return, I would have no problem with that.
As long as he's making a lot less than he is now, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think earning years are over. I can see him coming back here like Craig Conroy after his playing days are done. I don't know that there'd be a lot of room for him right now as a player, but we'll see.
Craig Conroy is a really good comparison, actually, although Monahan is the opposite in terms of personality, but, like, I think...
Yeah. But guy that they will find a job for. I mean, Craig came in as special assistant to the GM. We don't know what that really means before he became assistant GM. Like, you'll find a role to keep him around.
Picked up the coffee, picked up the bagels, you know.
If you need somebody to make all the phone calls and talk to everybody until they just shut you up until they agree to a trade, Conroy's your man.
That's right.
It was Jay Feaster's yes man. He just told Jay Feaster that he was doing a great job.
And not that succinctly. It took him 20 minutes to say it.
Of course.
And then I think the big note we should put in here is Jacob Markstrom, after this game, had the quote, "I suck at hockey right now." So the starting goaltender feeling bad about him, about his performance and the way he played in this one, which probably is why he did not get the start in the last game this week, as the Calgary Flames took a 5-2 win over the Washington Capitals. And also the debut of our reverse retro jerseys.
I was about to start us off because I think they look fantastic. I know Matt is wearing one right now. I was, I think there were some skeptics when they were first released. I mean, hearing leading up to the announcement that they were doing a black pedestal, I was just thinking, what's that going to look like? And I wasn't sure when they first announced it, but boy, oh boy, it looks fantastic.
Mike,
on the ice.
I'm one of those guys. I thought, what a stupid looking jersey when they announced it, when they said what it was going to be. When I saw it on the ice, do I want it to necessarily stick around? No, but I'd rather have that over Blasty as the third next year.
Wow, that's a big take.
Yeah, honestly, I prefer this one to Blasty, even though I like Blasty too. Honestly, if they wanted to just keep them both as like the third and fourth jersey, I'd be fine with that. They actually look... They're both good enough as a secondary option that,
To me, this team wears a C on their chest. If you want to put Blasty on the shoulders, son, fine, but this team wears a C.
I'm okay with the alternate because it gives you something different. It's an opportunity for the Flames to use a crest that is yellow primarily, because a yellow flaming C in concept does not look good. But Blasty is so detailed that you can have some different elements going on where it just gives you that different look. I've had a lot of thoughts about this.
Mind you, Mike, I'd also say that in concept, black on red probably didn't look good either.
Probably not. And you know what? That's fair too. What I will say is I think the appetite, if they ever do a fourth jersey, will be to go back to that black C, because it's an identity that a lot of people still resonate and really resonates with people. There's demand for black C. If they ever do a fourth jersey, like a full-time, bring it back for two or three games a year, that's what I think they'll do.
See, I said that with the reverse pedestal, if they would put a red C on the front, I think it would be even sharper.
Oh, you know what?
Done black on red. I'd love to see red on black.
I've thought about that too, but we've never seen that white C before on the crest. Really with a black jersey. I mean, I think the white C looks really good. I'm really impressed with how it turned out. Yeah,
everything
popped
quite a lot. They look very sharp on the ice,
and they played very sharp too. I think this is probably the game. If you're Daryl Sutter, you tell the guys this is our template for success.
Yeah, no disagreements here. I thought I was going to make that exact same point. They played. They looked as good as they played. I thought they were very effective. I thought even the fourth line had some good looks. I thought Mangiapane had his best game of the season. I mean, my goodness, those two shots that he took, those are the shots we know he can take. Those are the shots that, like the one that he scored in Game 5 of the playoffs last year against Dallas. I mean, when Mangiapane's shooting the puck with confidence, there's not a whole lot of goaltenders that can stop his shots. And we saw that yesterday.
Yeah, and seeing the players also engage physically, like that hit by Zadorov at center ice, like that was a really impressive hit. And they didn't really allow the Capitals very many opportunities to actually get anything going. And you didn't see Ovechkin getting open for shots at all, really, in the game. And they pretty much shut them right down, which I thought was good to see, because like at times this team has been really good at shutting teams down for stretches of times, and then they'll give up like a really blatant what are you doing type play, and I think this was the most cogent that we've seen them defensively throughout the game.
I would agree, and I think the most cogent we've seen. I think everybody seemed to sort of be clicking in the role they were supposed to yesterday. Were you guys surprised to see Huberto back on a line with Lindholm and Toffoli?
No.
I think we all knew it was going to happen eventually.
Yeah, I thought it made the most sense. You got your best playmaker playing with your best finisher. Huberto to Toffoli. Toffoli has looked terrific this season. He's been, I would say, their most consistent forward for a lot of the year. And Huberto is still coming. He's been a lot better of late. I didn't think he was amazing last night, but he's going to have those ups and downs. We've seen this with every star player who's come through town.
Yeah, even though he didn't have his best game, he collected 2 assists, which
last
that's
night?
Kind of... Yeah.
Really? I had no idea.
Which, that's indicative of a elite player. Like, even though he wasn't very good, still got his points, and... and then you have, like, Ruzicka, who got reassigned to the third line, and he scored, and he's looked just as effective on the third line as he did on the first line, and credit to him that he's really establishing himself as a reliable player throughout the lineup, regardless of what line he's playing on.
Yeah, Adam Ruzicka, I think, has been a very important success story for this team.
Sure.
And obviously he is prioritized because of his size, and he uses his size very effectively. He's a lot better skater at the NHL level than I thought he would be. And boy, he can shoot the puck. I mean, we saw it on the breakaway yesterday. He's got it.
Yeah, well, if he wasn't for the fact that he was so inconsistent in his draft year, that he probably would have been a first-round draft pick, but he was so wildly inconsistent, that's why he fell to the fourth. And we're seeing that first-round level skill in his offensive game, and he's looking like a real good one. And, as much as, like, we've been kind of on our show talking about, like, him possibly slowing down, he really hasn't since the start of the season.
Yeah, I could see 20 goals if he keeps this up. I mean, I would pencil my expectations. I think he's going to slow down a little bit, but I would hope by the end of the year he's in that 15-ish range. Kind of reminds me, I mean, a little bit of Mark Jankowski's first season, not going to lie, but I don't want to make that connection. But
Mike, I know you're younger than Matt and I, but I've compared him to David Moss in the past. David Moss had a really great first year when he came up here, and then he's just kind of a tweener in the league after that. And I hope that doesn't happen with Ruzicka. But yeah, I think, even guys like Eric Nystrom, same kind of thing. Really good first year, and then it's a matter of what happens after that.
Man, Eric Nystrom. What a player. Oh. That's a throwback.
Best four goal scorer ever in one game,
Yeah. back when he was playing with like Dallas, wasn't it?
Nashville.
Yeah. Nashville.
Nashville. I was at that game.
Going,
oh geez, you're letting Nystrom score, and then again and then again and again, and it's like, oh man.
Yeah. Classic.
Like that was like half of his goal total while he was a Flame. Like in one game.
Well, after that week, the Flames are still on the outside looking in, unfortunately. Fifth in the Pacific Division at 25 points. Edmonton, LA, Seattle, and Vegas ahead of us, 28, 30, 33, and 37 points. I think we all knew this was going to happen. I mean, the Flames have had a bit of a rough time, and I have to think now that they are officially outside, that might be some of that motivation, too. I think there's always been that, well, we're probably in a playoff position, we're okay. I think when you're outside looking in, it's a lot easier to motivate those guys and say, guys, now we got to do this.
Yeah, and thankfully the quality of opponents that they're going to be facing over the next few weeks is a little bit lesser.
We've talked about that quite a bit.
As you're starting to see guys like Mangiapane and Dubé coming out of their funk, if that can continue, then that should hopefully be beneficial long term.
So I think one of the biggest stories for this week, and Mike, I'd like to get your take as our guest first, another week of, I guess, Markstrom being inconsistent. I mean, we saw in the Montreal game, wasn't consistent. We saw Vladar, I think, for the first time this season, play the majority of the games this week in two, getting both the Florida and the Washington start. We talked about this last week, and that's why I'm curious to get your thoughts. What do you do here? Do you keep running Vladar? Do you put Markstrom back in the net to get his confidence up? Do you call up Wolf or Dansk? What do you do to solve this?
I don't call up either goaltender from the American League. I would stick with the two
that we
got.
East Coast League, however.
Yeah, go call up. Oh, my God. Who is the goaltender for Rapid
City? Daniil Chechelov.
Right, Daniil Chechelov. Yeah, of course. I was of the mind that you give Dan Vladar the game against Montreal. I was really intent upon that, and they didn't. They gave it to Markstrom, and that is what it is. I would have given Vladar the game against Montreal and Markstrom the game against Arizona. Now, at this point, I would give Vladar the Arizona game because, that's just – you got to get into a role here. You don't want to – I think with Markstrom – I don't – pretend to know much about goaltending, but if I was a head coach, and I will never be a head coach, I don't want to be a head coach, but I would just say,
coach,
I would always, definitely not. I would just ride the hot hand. I mean, you gotta go with the guy who, this is a team that traded a second round pick for Brian Elliott, and 2 months into the season, they ended up making Chad Johnson their starter for a month because he was their best option. And that's what I think what they need to do with Dan Vladar right now. He is their best option. He's calm. He makes all the right saves. He doesn't allow any bad goals, or not many. He's their best option right now.
Yeah, and with goaltenders, like especially like that comment that he made after the Montreal game where he's saying, like, I'm not a good goalie right now. You kind of need him, because he hasn't magically forgot how to play at this level. It's one of those that I think he just needs some time to clear his head and get back into the good habits during practice. And I think this will be more of a, when the coaching staff sees him doing the right things in practice, then you throw him back in. As long as Vladar is playing as good as he has, and just kind of play it by ear and let Markstrom kind of work things out. Because, I don't think that Markstrom will be bad enough where, like, this stuff will continue throughout the season. It's just, sometimes you just need to kind of get your head out of your own way. And I think that, like, right now he's figuratively gripping the stick too hard, trying not to make a mistake, which is causing him to make all of the mistakes. And, you know, it's kind of a self-fulfilling feedback loop kind of thing. And I think he just needs to get out of his own way right at the moment.
This situation also really reminds me of the start of the 2018-19 season, when they kept running Mike Smith, when they kept riding Mike Smith and giving him all these starts. And it just came to a point where you could see David Rittich was the better option. And I'm not saying that Markstrom's following a Mike Smith trajectory, not remotely. He's a lot younger. He's got a lot more hockey in front of him. All I'm saying is that you got this guy. He's hot. And what you also saw down the stretch that season is Mike Smith started to play a lot better when it turned into a tandem rotation. And when it turned into, we're going to just play whoever's better right now. And Mike Smith, I think down the stretch that year, had like a 9-10 save percentage in his last 15 games. All while David Rittich was also playing pretty well. And so I think that's just the setup that I think the Flames need to go with.
You know, and I think when we look at Flames goalies of the past, I mean, we've already talked, you know, today about Brian Elliott, Chad Johnson. But when I look at some of the last starters, even guys like Rittich, when I think of Rittich, I never thought Rittich was a starter. I thought he was a backup who was thrust into a starter role because that's what we needed. When I look at Dan Vladar and what I see from him, the way he plays, the way he practices, he feels like a guy who could be a starter in this league, like a legitimate starter. Maybe not a Stanley Cup starter, but with 32 starter jobs, I feel like he's a guy who could legitimately have one. And I think this is really his chance, as Daryl's talked about season opportunities. I think this is a chance, season opportunity, and show what he's got. And I think, you know, everyone in this market is looking at Wolf as the next starter. Maybe there's a trajectory change there. Maybe, you know, if Vladar starts playing and you give him the net, I'd give him the net, I think, all of, if not most of this week. I think I give him the net for Arizona, Minnesota, Columbus, unless, you know, he really doesn't look good. You know, maybe we start to change the trajectory and we look at for next year and the rest of this year, 1A, 1B scenario.
Yeah, really. I mean, I would almost maybe give Markstrom the Columbus game and then go back to Rittich for Toronto, Vladar for Toronto. I think 1A, 1B is just, it's tried and true.
And then I think next year you've got to take a hard look at, you know, is Markstrom still part of that scenario if Vladar can win that job?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like if, say, like Vladar is the better goaltender throughout the rest of the season, you have to just look from a pure cap space situation, and there are plenty of teams who could use a reliable starting goaltender like Markstrom, where if, you know, the situation changes and Vladar establishes himself as a quality starting caliber goaltender, you know, you have to look at it and maybe sign a veteran backup for cheap, like James Reimer, and, you know, go with that for next year and see, and let Wolf just dictate his own pace for when he comes up.
Yeah, I'm not quite ready to trade Markstrom this coming summer, but like, it's something that I mean, if Vladar is that good, I mean, you know, you got to consider if you can use Markstrom as a piece to address another area that you want to improve, sure. whether it be getting another forward, getting another defenseman who's cost controlled. You got a lot of money to play with if you move Markstrom. So.
And how often have we seen a goalie look fantastic for 1 year and then not the next year? Like, I don't think you say, well, Dan Vladar looks great this year. All right, trade Markstrom. Then next year we go, crap. We got him and James Reimer. Gentlemen, we have a problem here. Like, I think you keep Markstrom for at least next year. You've already factored him into the salary cap, so I think you keep him for at least next year. At least, let's say, till Christmas next year to really see. Maybe he bounces back. Maybe Vladar, you know, falls off. And if nothing else, maybe he becomes a deadline move next year. That would be the earliest I could see them moving him.
Yeah, no disagreements here.
And I think, you know, with Vladar having two more years under contract, gentlemen, if we can get a starting goaltender for $2.2 million for the next year, we look at Brad Treliving again and putting that wizard hat on and going, wow, what an amazing cap ninja this guy is.
It's kind of a trend. Yeah. Like, it's the trend with these good teams. They don't necessarily spend a whole lot of money on goaltending. I said it on a Coyotes podcast that I was on this morning. I think
I apologize goaltending,
I think goaltending is the last thing to come in a build. I think goaltending is the most interchangeable part of a build, and it is the part that you need to maybe invest the least in, unless you have a guy like a Vasilevsky or a Shesterkin. You look at half the teams that have made the final or have won the cup over the last 20 years, and you get all these stories about guys like Jordan Binnington and Mika Kiprusoff being acquired midway through a season, Dwayne Rolison being a deadline addition, you know, Jordan Binnington, Cam Ward, Darcy Kemper being acquired for 1 year and then being let go. I mean, it's just kind of
and less and less are you seeing the career goalie, right? The guy who's standing on his head and taking his team all the way. I think, like Mike said, you can often add in a good enough goalie behind a great team and go far. We're not seeing the Patrick Waughs, the Brodeurs. And Mike, it's interesting you brought up Kiprusoff there. I mean, we brought in Kiprusoff. He was brought in to be a backup. He was the third stringer in San Jose. And it wasn't until we tested him and realized what we had that we went, oh, wow. This guy's something special, and maybe I'm not saying Vladar is going to end up being the next Kiprusoff, but you know, you bring in a guy who was the third stringer in Boston, who they need to get rid of, who comes in here and proves his way to the top. It's happened before.
Yeah, Flames have a lot of versatility at the goaltending position. We'll talk about the Wranglers in a bit, but Dustin Wolf, obviously, being as amazing as he is as a prospect, and I don't use that word lightly. He is amazing. What he has done at pretty much every level, he is a perfectionist, and you can see it shine through in the way that he plays. I mean, even going back to high school when he was like a 99 average student, this is a kid who just bleeds goaltending proficiency, and he's done it at every level. So
what happened to the other
considering,
1%?
Yeah, that's Danny. You've
disappointed us, Wolf.
That's the teacher
what we're
in
saying, you.
You know. That's the instructor in you, Danny.
There you go.
Yeah, just clearly not good enough. Go be a sports person now.
That's right. There goes your doctorate hopes. You better go play some hockey. Well, guys, and Mike, I think you mentioned finishers earlier, and it's got me thinking this week about, you know, Tkachuk was a finisher. Johnny was a finisher. Goudreau. With the Flames losing their, I would say, maybe their two best finishers, their 200-point guys from the last few seasons in the offseason, and I'll go with Mike's thoughts first and then over to Matt. Do we feel like the Flames have lost their two best finishers and maybe didn't replace that position on the roster?
Yes, but I don't think they lack finishers. I just think, Jonathan Huberdeau, I think, has an excellent shot. I just don't think he uses it enough, and I think that's where you fall into. He kind of reminds me of Alex Tanguay a little bit in that respect, where he doesn't shoot unless he's got an open net sometimes, or if he's on a two-on-one. And I think Huberdeau has the talent easily to be a 30-goal, 40-goal player in this league. It's just that's not the game that he plays. And so you talk about Mangiapane. I think Mangiapane's a terrific finisher, but even Nazem Kadri. I think this Flames team just has a different makeup this year. And they got to get those goals somewhere. I'm just not sure who's going to provide them.
It's one of those odd things where this team has plenty of guys that are able to do it. And, like, thus far this season, everybody just seems a little out of sequence. And, like, you've seen that up until this week where, like, Dubé and Mangiapane were, frankly, terrible all year. Where, like, they're on a 20-goal pace between the two of them, and, you know, like, they had over 60 goals last year, and it's like, that's not them as players, and like not necessarily that they'll get back to being 60 goals between them, but you know, at least 40-45 is what you should expect. And it's hard when certain guys are significantly underperforming like that through the first quarter of the season, and yet you have other guys who are performing better than expectations, like Ruzicka.
Like Richie, our seventh best
and
scorer.
And Zadorov, you know, leading the defenseman on the blue line there. And it's one of those things where I think things will start to balance themselves out. Like, I think you'll see more goals from Lindholm, more from Toffoli, as Huberto gets more comfortable with, like, where those guys are on the ice. I think Huberto himself will score more just as a function of that line getting better. If Dubé and Mangiapane can start scoring, I think you'll see Kadri get hot again, and the third line with Ruzicka, Coleman, and Backlund, I think they'll be more consistent if like all three of them are playing like they can. And you know, I think it'll be vastly more by committee, but I think that'll also indicate like what they need at the trade deadline, which is a guy who can actually just shoot exclusively.
Yeah, and I think you guys both, you know, brought up some names there. I think this is a chance for some guys who maybe weren't that top-end finisher to now take that role. And I think the thing we haven't seen yet, in my estimation, is just nobody stepped up to take that spot. We mentioned a lot of guys who could. Lindholm, Huberto, Mangiapane. You know, I think even Toffoli could end up in that role. I think somebody just needs to grab the bull by the horns and, you know, jump in and take it. Mike, you wrote an article recently at Flames Nation talking about Milan Lucic. And the fact that Lucic has regressed, in your opinion, to the point where he's arguably the least effective player taking a regular shift in the NHL. He hasn't been a healthy scratch in nearly a decade, never in the 4 years under Sutter, and certainly doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon. So it sounds like you're advocating that maybe Lucic needs to eat some popcorn up in the press box for a couple games.
I just think Milan Lucic represents what the Flames do wrong with their fourth line. I think they had a really good fourth line 3 or 4 seasons ago. They have not gone back to that well since. You know, when they had Mangiapane down there, they had Garnet Hathaway down there, who they just promoted from Stockton. And then they had Derek Ryan, who, I mean, one of the best underrated free agent signings this team has made under Tree Living. And, you know, I think Milan Lucic, I think when they first acquired him from the Oilers, was an objectively good, well, I don't even, like, he just was a positively impactful player. I think he did a lot of things, even when he wasn't scoring, that endeared himself to both the fan base and to the coaching staff for very good reasons.
Contract aside, I agree with you.
I think he pushed play. He had a good shot. He used his shot pretty often. You know, he was a momentum changer. We heard Daryl Sutter talk about it in his answer when Danny Austin asked him about Lucic this week. He was a momentum changer. And at this point, I don't see it anymore. I don't see any momentum change when Lucic is on the ice. He's not shooting very much. I think yesterday when he had that 2-on-1 with Kevin Rooney, I think that was his 20th shot on goal of the season. So he's not even taking a shot per game anymore, which, I mean, that's just, I think that's largely an expectation. If you're an NHL forward, you want to get, you know, on average, one or more shots a game. And, you know, I just, his underlings are the worst on the team. He hasn't fought at all this season. But my issue even isn't, like, with Lucic as much as it is just the way that Daryl structured his training camp. And I talked about that a little bit in the piece, where there wasn't really any room for promotion for anybody. The guys who were the AHL guys who were in group one, which was pretty much constant from day one of camp, it was always the guys like the Clark Bishops and the Alex Gallants who were just there to sort of fill space. You know, I just don't get the sense, and I didn't get the sense, that there was really any room for players who Daryl wasn't already familiar with. You know, I think with Milan, I harbor no ill will against Milan Lucic, like, at all. I just don't think he has earned the rope.
That's what
a
guy who doesn't want to get punched in the face would say.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, like, I like Milan Lucic. I think that Milan Lucic has been a very good player, and I think he's been a very good NHL player. I think the end comes for us all eventually, and I think I think that's sort of where we're at.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Sutter even said this, that different guys contribute in different ways. And from being around the team, the little bit that I have and seeing some of them, you know, before COVID and the locker room and that sort of thing, I think Lucic's biggest asset here is the leadership that he brings. And I think, you know, I've even advocated a few times, put the C on Lucic. Like, I think he's the backstage, the back, you know, and leader for this team. And I think that might be why he stays in the lineup. But, you know, you said it, Mike. I mean, the end comes at some point. He's making $5.25 million this year. I don't see this guy. I mean, I wouldn't say that he's a liability right now, but I think that this might be the end of the road from a National Hockey League perspective for him.
Yeah, I totally understand everything you just said. I think the leadership aspect of is one. I think it's probably the biggest aspect that people on the outside don't see, and that can all honestly include me as well. I mean, all a lot of people can go by is what we see on the ice, but with Milan, I think that's clearly there. My thought about that is necessarily, I don't know if you necessarily need to play to be that leader. I don't know. Like, I think on the ice, you know, I think the leadership that Daryl provides. Daryl's not strapping on the skates, I think that's something where I'm even tempted to say, should this guy be a player coach, that sort of thing, you know? And we've seen that with various players in different levels, and I just think you have an opportunity here to make a team that has four really good lines. And I think that is very possible, even if you bring up a guy, and that's something that's going to move into our next conversation. But I just think with Lucic, I think he is the impediment. I think you can have a good fourth line with a guy like Richie or a guy like Lewis. I just don't think with the way that he's playing right now, you can do it necessarily with Lucic.
The only thing I disagree with you about your leadership and him not needing to be there, I believe the rules state that if you're not dressed, you can't be in the room between periods. And from what I understand, that is one of the things that Lucic has done well for this team, is given those speeches and told these guys to wake up. So you may need to bite the bullet and say we need him there because he can do that.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, there's a lot that goes on, and they have the pulse.
But
on
at the same
it.
Time, if he becomes the 13th forward, I would be okay with that too. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, frankly, most of the time, other than Brett Ritchie, for most of the year, the fourth line has consistently looked inadequate, and whether it's Kevin Rooney or Milan Lucic, it's one of those where I think this team is needing a little bit more pace and up-temponess from their fourth line. And, like, you're not seeing... Like, Lucic is fine if he's engaging physically and hitting consistently. And, like, there have been a couple of games where when he's playing like that and you're starting to see, like, more of a forecheck from that fourth line, that the fourth line's actually playing effectively. But you've seen that maybe two or three times this year, and the rest of the time it's like they're just out there as a placeholder, and that's not really helping any of the other lines to get rest or whatever, because it's like, okay, now the momentum shifted the other way, now you have to go get the momentum back, and like there's just not enough consistency from that fourth line to keep deploying them as is.
At the same time,
and especially
he's not the
with,
only guy struggling.
No, he's not. I think the Kevin Rooney signing was a head scratcher from day one. I couldn't believe they signed him to a 2-year deal on the first day of free agency after they lost their star. This is a guy who has frankly never been an NHL contributor, and his AHL track record is poor. But you know, I think they've loaded up the bottom of their lineup with a lot of the same players. That is my main complaint.
Yeah, and like Rooney's a like quality 13th forward.
Yeah.
But he's not, as you said, it's not a day one signing. That's kind of a end of off season type thing. And he's adequate as a fill in guy. It's just that.
The thing I like about Rooney is, as a 13, is he can play all three forward positions.
I don't mind that, and I don't mind that he can skate. I just think he's completely lost when he gets into the offensive zone, and it's time for him to shoot the puck. And it's just like, how many times have we seen it even this year? I mean, I think the 2-on-1 that he had with Lucic last night was probably his best offensive play of the season. But I've seen it already 4 or 5 times where Rooney gets the puck on a 3-on-2 or a 2-on-1 and he just loses it. And it's just like, oh my goodness. But like, I don't, in isolation, all four of those players, Rooney, Richie, Lewis, and Lucic, I think there is, I don't think in isolation having one or two of those players is a problem. I just think with the way that they're going right now, having all four of them gives you too much of the same thing. And I think you need some of that youthful energy to come in, frankly.
I agree. And especially with how the Calgary Wranglers have been playing so well, and especially like how Ruzicka has developed into a top nine forward, at least to this point, and a good one, and you're seeing other guys in the A that have been at least his equivalent in the past, it's like, can we start to see some guys transition up, which the team, I think, frankly, could use a bit more of, period.
You know, and I want to be fair here to Milan Lucic. Again, I think we all agree that this is near the end. I would rather have this version of Milan Lucic than have tried to buy out James Neal.
True. Yeah, I have many thoughts on that. I think we'll leave it at that. I think Lucic, I don't think it was a bad idea to try and get something out of the money. I think they got something for the money for the first couple of years. The cap savings, you know, I think there's a give and take. I think you might be better off not having the player on the roster. And I think
for sure, I think they were trying to make you know, lemonade out of lemons at the time. And I think they made the best move they could based on the situation they were in.
Yeah. And I think that, like, for how up until this year has played out, Lucic has been a very effective player at the role that he's had. Not $5.5 million worth, but, you know, at least like playing at about a $3 million level player. And
but we all knew when he came in, we weren't going to get our money's worth, right? It was just, it's better than Neal.
Yeah. Which, you know, and now, like, that we're in the last year of his contract, it makes entire sense that he's kind of falling off. I think that was kind of to be expected. I think it was actually more expected that he would have struggled last year, too. And yet he had a rather effective season last year, played well up until this year. And, you know, and frankly, with his $5.25 million contract, I would not be shocked if at the trade deadline he's included in a deal just for cap reasons.
This is another guy who seems to love Calgary. His family seems to love Calgary. This is a guy sort of like Brian McGrattan, who's still around the organization in various ways. I can see Lucic getting offered a job off the ice for as long as he wants to be here after this year.
It has occurred to me a lot that the situation with Lucic right now is really similar to the situation at the end with Brian McGrattan in his last year here, where he had a season the year before with the Flames. I think he did what he was expected to do, and all of a sudden the Flames came out of the gate and they were looking to take a step, and all of a sudden Brian McGrattan wasn't a viable player for them anymore and they had to send him down. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Matt or Dan, in terms of, you know, the impact that Lucic has on this organization. I think in terms of organizational value, the trade that they made, you know, to move a player like Neal, who was a negative just in pretty much every facet, out of town, and get in a player like Lucic, who has been a positive on the ice, who has been a positive off the ice even longer. I do think Lucic struggled at the end of last season. I look at the numbers. I keep track of this. He hasn't scored a goal with his hockey stick now in 83 games. And it's just the sort of thing where...
Has he scored a goal with anything else in those 83 games?
He has had one banked in off his left skate blade. Just one in those 83 games. And so I think, and that includes the playoffs as well. I think it has been a gradual decline. I mean, even at the start of last year, what I saw was a player who was outside of the 5-hole goals, which were a lot of fun. I saw there were cracks. There were some cracks forming. And And then as the year went on, the cracks started to grow, and I think we're at the point this year where I almost think you can make it so Lucic is a guy who you manage the load of. I just don't see why he needs to be in the lineup every game. That's my main complaint.
I think the ideal maybe Cinderella story for Lucic at this point is even if he becomes a 13th forward, you keep him on the roster, maybe he gets a ring this year, and then he rides off into the sunset.
Well, hey, I mean, not everybody plays every game. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I wrote the article about Lucic, and I thought there was a funny comment. Well, you know, not even Lanny played every game in 89. And I don't know if I would compare Lucic to Lanny, but, you know.
Well, you know, and you look at that year, and you see, like, the iconic Flames captains hoisting the cup, and Poplinski's not even in a jersey because he wasn't playing that night. And, you know, it's one of those where it's one of those, I think, like, he would be the best 13th forward candidate. And, like, if you recalled one of the Flames prospects and who and where they get put in the lineup and how the lineup gets adjusted is, you know, up for debate. But having him as the 13th forward, I think, makes a lot more sense. So that way, like, if you're playing a heavier team, you can throw him out there. If you're playing kind of a lighter team where his type of game is not necessary, then, you know, you can have the more skilled guy in the lineup.
Well, let's get to our main event then. Let's talk the reason we brought Mike on, to talk about the Wranglers. Mike's been following them for most of the season, and we've been talking about call-ups here. I think everyone in the Calgary market has. We start the week by saying Matthew Phillips was named the AHL Player of the Week last week, and Mike, the Wranglers maybe had a slow start to the season this year, especially considering what the Stockton Heat did last year. Seems like they're starting to heat up right now.
Yeah, they are terrific. They're an excellent hockey team right now. I think, you know, we've seen them win 10 of 12. They have points in 11 of 12. And, yeah, I mean, Phillips was named Player of the Month, too. He had a terrific month, 18 points in 12 games, I think, and he continued that in the weekend series sweep of San Diego. He had 4 points in 2 games. He scored a goal yesterday that was one of the nicest goals I've ever seen at any level. I don't know if either of you saw it, but holy mackerel.
I saw the replay of it, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing the goalie can do on that one.
it was straight-up Datsukian.
Yeah.
The little backhand flip shot. But, you know, it's a really well-rounded team. Yeah, they've got a way better defensive group than I expected they would, and it's all translating. And Dustin Wolf is Dustin Wolf.
Well, let's go through this group, maybe position by position, and prove to people, because we hear a lot, oh, the Flames' cupboards are bare, and I think we can prove that's not the case. Let's start at the back end. Let's start with Wolf and Dansk in net. Obviously, Wolf's the star of this team. Wolf is the guy who's standing on his head right now. For Flames fans that haven't seen him yet, what do they need to know about Dustin Wolf?
Dustin Wolf is a superstar. He is one of the best goaltenders I've ever seen at this level. His lateral movement is unbelievable. He's got an excellent glove hand. He doesn't play small. He can stop anything he sees. He's the real deal, really. I mean, you look at his AHL numbers this year, they're gaudy. .915 save percentage, and he's just got everything you want in a goalie. And
he's only, what, 21?
Quite frankly, I think he is just a superstar.
So, just to add to that, like, I would, looking around the league, like, I think he's one of the top 3 or 4 goalie prospects across the NHL right now, and he looks like a goalie that might be a star in the NHL in a few years.
The Flames finally got it right. I mean, how many prospects do we go through, you know? I think about some of these guys we've had recently, Tyler Parsons and Mason McDonald, and guys that we thought, wow, this guy could be the next guy, and then they fizzled out, so it looks like, you know, patience has been our friend here.
Yeah, with Wolf, I mean, you look at his numbers last year. He didn't actually have a shutout all season long until he got to the playoffs.
He didn't lose until January, did he?
Something like that. Like, he had a crazy start. And, you know, he elevated his game in the playoffs. His AHL playoff numbers were unbelievable. I think he had like a .929 save percentage. He had his first 3 career AHL shutouts came in the playoffs that year. I mean, the Stockton Heat played against the eventual Calder Cup champion Chicago Wolves in the fourth round of the playoffs. They made it to the Final Four. They fell in six. Wolf was tremendous. And yeah, they got contributions from everybody. But I think Oscar Dansk, he's a veteran. He's 28, 29. He's played some games in the NHL with Vegas back in their first season, back when everybody died. Back when everybody in goal for Vegas fell apart, when they went through Maxime Legacy and Dylan Ferguson and everybody. You know, Dansk hasn't played a whole lot. He finally got his first win a couple weeks ago. It might have been against Abbotsford. And, I haven't seen a whole lot from him yet, but he already looks better than Adam Werner did last year. Werner really struggled behind Wolf. And the difference, like, that's how good Wolf is. Last year, there was like a 40-point difference between when Wolf was in net versus when anybody else was in net, whether it was Werner or the other guy they had, Shortridge. The save percentage on the team went from like 925 to 885. There was a crazy difference.
So, Mike, I mean, you mentioned it. The Stockton Heat went deep last year, deeper than we've seen a Flames affiliate go, I think, since they were in St. John. Right now, they're second in the Pacific Division. Is this a team that has a legitimate shot this year at a Calder Trophy?
100%. I think this is a team that I penciled in as being a potential contender before the season, and they have impressed me even more. This is a team that I think people will really embrace as they continue to play out of the Saddle Dome. They've got one of the very best top lines in all of the league, all of that level, and their second line is pretty good too. I mean, Cole Schwint is back now. He's playing on their second line as the right wing. They've got Connor Zary playing center on a line that does not include either Matthew Phillips or Jacob Pelletier. They sort of got him anchoring his own ship there, and he's done a great job. He's still learning on the job. Daryl has said a couple times this is kind of like his first pro year, and for a guy who has been through a lot to get to this point, it does not look like he's been through a lot. He looks really confident. Jacob Pelletier, one of the best players of his age group, probably the best player of his age group in the league right now. He's one of only four players from the first round of the 2019 draft who has not played an NHL game, and undeservedly so, I would say. I think he earned it last season, and I think he's earned it this season as well. Phillips, best player in that league right now.
A lot of people talk about Cole Schwint coming over in that big deal with Tkachuk. What are we seeing from Schwint? What should fans know, and what do you think his upper limit in the NHL is?
I worry a little bit about Cole Schwint sometimes because I'm not sure what his projectable attributes are behind his shot. He's got a terrific shot. He's probably got the best shot on the team, like, if I'm being honest. His shot is unbelievable. He can score from anywhere. I think he's still really young. People got to remember how young this guy is. He's like 21. And I think some people get caught up in saying these prospects, if they haven't done anything by the time they're 22, they're not really worth following. And I think for a lot of these guys, you just got to stay with them. And Cole Schwint is a guy who I think is going to be worth following. But I want to see him at center. And I think we're going to see that next year. When Zahorna is probably going to be gone, and, you know, I think Cole Schwint will get some reps there. For now, he's a power play guy. He's one of their better power play guys. He just got back from injury. He hurt his foot a couple weeks ago, and he just got back last night. But I've got some hopes that he can maybe be a third line forward.
Matt, it sounded like you wanted to chime in there.
Yeah, just on the overall with a lot of the players, like, you see guys like Phillips and Pelletier, like, frankly, with how they've played, like, if the Flames were a mediocre team, they'd already be in the NHL. I think that, and that's part of why, having such a good team has allowed those guys to really flourish more in the AHL, and, like, allowing a guy like Matthew Phillips to really go beast mode down there and, like, really develop his confidence to the point where, like, he literally looks like a player who could step in and play in the top six in the NHL right now and not skip a beat. And I think that, like, if they had rushed him or Pelletier up, I think that might have interfered with them a bit. And you're seeing both those guys looking like they could legitimately emerge as a top nine forward for this team, not only this year, but moving forward.
Well, that's an interesting discussion. I'd like to get Mike's take on. Mike, I've, and Matt will probably roll his eyes when I say this yet once more, but I've always been of the opinion I would rather have a guy over-ripen in the AHL than bring him up too early. And I think, honestly, going all the way back to a guy like Sam Bennett, I think he could have used more AHL seasoning there. I mean, we don't have to have that discussion, but like Matt was just saying, I think not rushing some of these guys. And you were talking about sort of if a guy hasn't, you know, made it by 22 or we don't see that, maybe it's time to cut bait. I think some of these guys like Cole Schwind, you got to give them until 24, maybe even 25 to really season themselves in the AHL. And I think in a lot of cases, it's better to be the big fish in the small pond than the fourth line fish in the big pond.
Yeah, I think that with these players who like a Matthew Phillips, I think having them be around, you know, still when they're 24, I think you got to go. I think you got to show faith in these guys. I understand that the most prospects, you know, the top end prospects, they're in the NHL by the time they're 21, 22. I also think it's funny. Has Sam Bennett played a single AHL game? I really don't think he has.
I don't think so.
Yeah, and so I think it's a case of, you know, I think with Matthew Phillips and with Jacob Pelche, I don't mind them being down there for now. I just think it's a case where you have to eventually bring them up. And
I agree.
And I think, you know, I just think with Matthew Phillips, he's going to be a guy who there's some urgency, I think, to give him a try because he is going to be a UFA at the end of this season, sort of like Michael Bunting was in Arizona when he went to Toronto. And I think with Phillips, I can see him being a guy who sticks around if he gets a shot, but he hasn't gotten that shot yet. And so it's something to keep an eye on.
No, I totally agree with Phillips. I think, again, Phillips is 24. So I think he's of that, you know, he's of that age where you got to either cut him or bring him up. But a guy like Zari at 21 or Pelty at 21, I think for a lot of those guys, you've got to, I mean, I want to see them. I want to give them a shot. I want to see what they've got here. But I don't think that they need to be NHL regulars at 21. I think there's a lot more to learn from those guys, or for those guys being, you know, the top line of the American League. And I think the other benefit there is being so close to the NHL. I mean, even Daryl said he's watched a lot more of the farm team than he ever has as a Flames coach because they're so close, right? So I think that having those guys being close and being able to be influenced by the team, you can almost afford to have a little bit more AHL runway with them.
Well, and you look at guys like Mangiapane or Garnett Hathaway, which we mentioned earlier, they were legitimately star players at the AHL level before they got recalled, and they kind of forced their way onto the team. And you look at how Matthew Phillips has played. Like last year, I don't think he was quite ready yet to push his way onto a team, but like now he's playing at such a high level that it's one of those where I think you have to give him that shot because he is playing to that level of being too good for the AHL. And, like, he is legitimately the single best player in the league. So give him that runway. And, you know, either he picks up the baton and runs with it at the NHL level and you've now got a top six forward, which, hey, that's awesome. Or you know that he's just that in-between guy. And some other team will, you know, like the Arizonas of the league, will next year will sign him as a free agent and see if they can get whatever out of him.
And we've seen so many times guys that are too good for the AHL, not good enough for the NHL. I think that's what we got to find out with Phillips. Is he, I mean, you know, I would even look at a guy like Jamie Lundmark, right? I think he was way too good for the AHL, never really stuck with one team as a full-time NHLer, just became a journeyman. Is that Phillips or is Phillips a top six guy?
I love Jamie Lundmark. I thought he was awesome. But
yeah, and he, you know, and he might just end up being like the new Nathan Gerby, who's all right, but not anything remarkable at the NHL level.
I think
Gerby had a couple of good seasons, but yeah, I think what you're hoping for is he turns into a Jonathan Marchessault, and that's a huge expectation to put on any young player. They have had very similar trajectories. I mean, if you look at Phillips and Marchessault, even going back 3 years, when Marchessault was 21, when Phillips was 21, Phillips actually outproduced Marchessault in the AHL. They were very close, but their point per game pace, Phillips had him up. He had him up on him. And so
yeah,
this is the case of a guy who You know, I think there are a lot of people out there who view Phillips as having come out of nowhere. I watched Phillips three seasons ago, when the farm team was up here, and he ended up tying for the Stockton Heat scoring lead with 21 points in 30 games. And on the surface, that doesn't seem like much. That Stockton Heat team was completely ransacked. They lost half their roster that season. Justin Kirkland got hurt. Godden was gone for a bit. Rozicka was gone for a bit. Connor Mackey was gone for a bit.
That's when they had the taxi squad, too.
That's right. That's when they had the taxi squad. So that team, I completely write off that season, frankly, in terms of development time. I think there's so much that's not worth even thinking about with that season. And if you look at the year before, Phillips had 33 points in 39 games, and then he had a fractured kneecap, I think, that kept him out for the rest of the year. And he stayed pretty healthy since, aside from a bout of COVID last year. And his production last year was good. His production this year is the best in the league. It's a situation where I would expect, if he hits free agency, which I'm not sure if he will. I mean, he's a Calgary boy. He might just want to stay here. But if he does, he'll have the league after him. He will.
Yeah, I really don't think there's a team in the league that wouldn't want to take a shot at him just because of the fact that, hey, he might be a good, 20-plus goal scorer at the NHL level, potentially, and you just never know. And
it's less than a million, yeah. I think everyone will throw him a deal.
It is rare to see a guy get to this age with this level of AHL production without an NHL call-up. It is rare.
Well, before we talk about the first call-up, which I think is the big question everyone wants to ask, I think there's a part of this team that nobody, or at least most fans, don't talk about a lot, and that's the D-men. And I know we've had some recent call-ups. We've seen DeSimone, we've seen Gilbert. The other guys we have on the blue line here, Colton Pullman, Ilya Sovalev, and Jan Kuznetsov, and Nick Meloche. What do we need to know about these defensemen?
Well, you didn't mention the best one, who's Jeremy Poirier.
That's true. I forgot
Poirier. And by the way, just a point with that. What a brilliant draft day thing that Treliving pulled by trading down from 19 to 24 and getting 2 third-round picks and picking up Jeremy Poirier as well, just from moving down a couple spots, getting the guy they wanted anyway, and then picking up an absolutely amazing defenseman offensively.
Yeah. I don't know if I like Jan Kuznetsov as much, but Jeremy Poirier has been a revelation in his first year with the Wranglers. He looks like a guy who could be an Oliver Shillington type guy in the NHL if he makes that jump, which I think he'll get the opportunity to make that jump at some point. He really does everything out there. He's fast. He's really fast. He has a tendency to carry the puck up the ice like we sometimes see with Nikita Zadorov, and he actually has the speed to back it up too. And he can just fly. He's a really good player.
Of these guys that I would still classify prospects, I think we'd all probably say Meloche, DeSimone, and Gilbert are no longer in the prospect camp. We haven't seen a lot of Connor Pullman, but he's been around the organization for a few years. Does he have an NHL future, Mike?
No.
Career AHLer?
It's nothing against Colton Pullman, but I mean, you know, he's
26.
He's a Rob Hamilton type of guy. He's you know, it's not, you know, I think Colton Pullman is a good shutdown AHL defenseman, but I don't think he'll get another contract after this season.
So of all these guys, the one that's the most likely to, you know, make a dent for the Flames in the future, I would say it's probably only Poirier.
Yeah, Poirier, I mean, Jan Kuznetsov is a funny player because looking back at what he's done over the years, he has always been a player who's been playing as the youngest guy in his league. And so it's been difficult for him to establish much in terms of his numbers. Like he was a 17-year-old in the NCAA. He was, I think, in the USHL when he was like 15. I mean, he's been in the American Hockey League for the last 3 seasons now. He was in the AHL when he was 18. And it's just like this guy has always, it's been hard to get a read on him. And so I'm keeping my eye on him. But like, yeah, really the only one is Poirier in terms of a guy who I'm sure will play NHL games.
I think that's fair. And I think that's been an issue with the Flames for a while. They've had some great forward prospects. Outside of, you know, Anderson and Shillington, they really haven't drafted a whole lot of really top-end defensemen.
Except for Adam Fox.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, and that whole era where they got Kulak, Anderson, and Shillington and had them all at the same time, you know, like the Flames have been more focusing on forwards mostly through the draft for the last like 4 or 5 seasons.
We got plenty of those now.
Yeah, and it's one of those where I think moving forward you'll see a little bit more balance in the first round.
We got the goalie, we got the top end forwards.
Yeah, and we'll see. It'll be interesting, especially like the next couple of drafts. I do believe there are a number of quality defensemen throughout the draft. So the
question is how many picks the Flames will keep.
True.
So, Mike, you've watched this team a lot more than Matt, a lot more than me, a lot more than a lot of our listeners. The question has come up a lot, and I think you've raised it too. The Flames probably need to make a call-up from the American League right now. Try somebody new, get somebody in the lineup. If you were the GM calling down to, I guess, his associate GM, if you're Colin Pascal saying, we need to bring a guy up, who are you recommending the Flames recall at this point?
Well, you have to have the chat with the head coach first to see who he's going to play, and that's where I think there's going to be some discrepancies in beliefs, because Darryl has been at a lot of these games, and I mean, I would call up Matthew Phillips because he's earned it. He's been in the organization for a lot of years now, a lot of years. I mean, he was at the very first development camp I was ever at, which is crazy. I mean, he was there in 2016, and yeah. I think he's earned it. I don't think he's the guy who's going to get the call, even if they run into injuries. I don't think he's going to... I am of the mindset that I don't think Phillips plays another game with the Flames.
That 2016 dev camp is when we met you.
That's right. Yeah. I don't think he's...
When you looked like a 12-year-old.
That's right. Yeah. Now I look like a 16-year-old. No, I think...
pretty much.
Yeah. I think Phillips is gone this summer, and I think he's... Rightfully so. I think he's going to seek out... full-time NHL employment.
And I think he'll get it.
I think he'll get it, too. I think the guys who are going to get called up are guys like Radim Zahorna, guys like Ben Jones, guys like Walker Duehr, Connor Zary, maybe, but I don't think he's going to be... I don't think the Brads and Darryl will be in a position where they want to necessarily rush Connor Zary.
Zary lost a lot of last season too, so he's probably a guy you want to keep in the American League.
That's what I would do. I would keep him down there for a little bit. I could see Cole Schwint coming up. Adam Klapka is not coming up. He's not really an AHL player at this point.
What about Marty Pospisil?
I could see it. Marty's been hurt so much. It's taken away so much of his intrigue. And he is an intriguing player, and I think Darryl would like to coach him. But I don't know. I think he's down the pecking order a little bit.
You know, I think it's interesting to get your thoughts on this, because the fans want Jacob Peltier. The fans want, you know, Phillips. The fans want Zary. And I think if you're looking for a long-term top six guy that you think comes from that group, I think those are the guys to bring in. Matt and I have talked about that. But I think you're right, Mike. I don't think those are the guys Darryl Sutter is going to play in that role.
I really don't think so. It would require him to change a lot. I mean, this Darryl Sutter healthy scratched Matthew Phillips down the stretch when the Flames had already been eliminated from playoff contention two seasons ago. I mean, I don't see really him playing him now, quite frankly. And
The guys you mentioned, I can even see Clark Bishop getting a call for the bottom six.
God, okay. I mean, yeah, look, I don't want to disparage Clark Bishop. I could see it too. He's got the NHL experience. I think
that's what Darryl's going to be looking at for his bottom six, is that NHL experience. Same thing with Zahorna there, I think.
Yeah, I think like the most likely out of everybody would probably be Walker Duehr, just because he fills that prospect quota while being...
Well, and he was up here last year. Yeah, Walker Duehr was up here last year. Darryl knows what he's got there.
I'll be honest. Yeah. I don't think Walker Duehr gets another NHL contract after this season with anybody. But
I don't think so. He's like, what was it?
Bryce Van Brabant.
Yeah, or Philp. You know.
I don't think he's nearly as good as Philp. I think he is on that Bryce Van Brabant level of depth AHL winger who the coach might see as being a depth NHL winger in a pinch, but he's not.
Yeah, I think Walker Duehr was a neat experiment, but it's probably time to move on.
Yeah, but I could see him getting the recall. I could.
So, you know, I mean, and I've said this in our show sort of obviously sarcastically. In the past, fans wanted to see these guys. Call them up. We want to see them. My answer this year has been, well, go figure out when the Wranglers play next and go see them. Like, they don't need to come and wear a flaming C for you to see these guys anymore. And I know, Mike, you've written recently about how, you know, the Flames, when they put some of these guys like Mangiapane on their fourth line, he did very well there, even though he's probably not a fourth line talent. Would your recommendation this year be to bring up a guy like Peltier and put him on the fourth line, or if you want to fill that role, bring up Zahorna?
I don't have an issue with prospects playing on the fourth line, because with the way that the fourth line is playing right now, A, I think it'll make your team potentially better, and B, I don't think you're going to be limiting the upside of your prospects, because the fourth line is actually playing quite a lot. Lucic is averaging 11 minutes a game right now, and I don't think that is insignificant.
Well, the
ice
question time. Is, should they be, right?
Yeah, well,
I
that's
mean, if we just limit
entirely.
Their time.
Yeah, no, but I think you know, I think NHL reps, limited NHL exposure, is the best way for these guys to take steps forward. And I think, you know, if you don't have room open in the top six immediately, I just want to see them even in small doses in the NHL.
Yeah,
and like you could see, like I could easily see Peltier filling Mangiapane's role from a few years ago, being that quality fourth line guy who chips in every once in a while and plays on the penalty kill possibly, and just, you know, especially Peltier more so than Phillips, because Peltier can play the physical game
a little bit more.
And, you know, sort of like Mangiapane can throw the occasional hit. Not his bread and butter, but he can. And I think that where Phillips is, you pretty much have to airlift him into the top six.
I would be fine with having Matt Phillips on the third line. I think top nine is the difference that I would make. But I even would say Phillips could play on the fourth line. He's not a wallflower. He goes into the hard areas. I think with either of those guys, you could give them a try there. I just think it's going to take an injury. It's going to take an injury or two. And I even if they get the injuries, I just don't think it's going to be either of those guys.
So let me ask a question then. And Matt, I'll ask... Oh, sorry. Did you want to say something, Matt?
No.
So, Matt, I'll ask you this first, because you've been our big Daryl Sutter supporter for years. We know this is a Daryl Sutter thing, and Mike even said, who's the coach want to play? This coach likes veteran guys. This coach, you know, likes guys that he's familiar with. We got Daryl Sutter signed for two more years now. Do we need to worry about guys like Phillips leaving this organization because they're not getting a shot? And is that something that we think the GM maybe needs to tell the coach, these guys need to be playing? Are we worried about sort of an over-veteran team under Daryl and missing out on some great talent?
Well, it's one of those where I think that Daryl is trying to, like with his comments when he was asked point blank about Phillips, is trying to take a little bit of the pressure off of Matthew Phillips. Because, like, if he's getting recalled, like, he's got the pedigree of, oh, he's Mr. Awesome in the AHL. And if he doesn't step in and be Mr. Awesome right from game one, you know, people are going to be like, oh, well, he's just, you know, this, that, or whatever, and not, you know... And I think it's partially to allow Phillips a little bit of room where when he gets recalled, and I think that his comments about Phillips is a bit of a smokescreen, because he's very good at manipulating things in the media, and I think it's more of a, you know, like, if Phillips continues to play like this, like, there is absolutely nobody in the NHL that is a management person that's not going to recall him, because he will have forced his way on the team. Like, there's, you know, you can't be tearing the A a new one and not, like, being under the age of 25 and not get recalled. It's just not, for asset management's sake, it makes zero sense not to. And I think that with Daryl's comments, it's more of a trying to make sure to reduce expectations for when the guy does eventually get recalled, that he doesn't need to be, you know, a point per game player right out of the box. And I do think that he will get recalled, even though Sutter, you know, is being like the stodgy, oh, well, he needs to be a veteran guy or over 6 feet, you know, like giving that impression. And I think it's more just to, you know, create more of a little bit of a safe space and breathing room for him when he gets recalled.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you've just said, and I've given up trying to interpret Daryl Sutter's comments, quite frankly.
Nothing is as it appears.
Yeah.
But, you know, Daryl Sutter seems to be having more fun with the media this time around. Like, he makes almost Bob Hartley-like comments now. Like, you can tell that he's more, I think, having fun screwing with the media.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And you can see back when he was with the Kings that, like, he had young guys coming up all the time with that Kings team in 2012 and 2014. And, like, Toffoli, he came up when he was, like, 21, and he was having a similar season to Peltier and Phillips, and he, you know, won the Stanley Cup with them. And it's one of those things where if you're good enough, you'll get an opportunity. And I think that, first and foremost, like, Darryl's not stupid. Like, if the guy's kicking some serious ass in the farm team, yeah, you can always use another guy that can score like that, and so you'd give him a shot. And it's just the... you have to take advantage of the opportunities, and you have to earn those opportunities. And to this point, those guys in the A have been, you know, making the case of, yeah, I'm too good for this league, call me up. And that's step one. And I think Darryl's giving them some breathing room if they struggle, when they struggle at the NHL level.
Anything you want to add, Mike?
I just don't think it's going to happen with Phillips here. I think it'll happen with Peltier. I think it'll happen with Zary. I just think Phillips, you know, it has to happen in the next 6 months. And I think if they have the desire to add a player like Phillips, it won't be Phillips who they call. I just don't think so. I think it'll be Peltier. I think it'll be Zary. I just don't think it'll be Phillips.
So in that case, do you think it's poor asset management if Phillips walks as a free agent? If Darryl decides this isn't a guy he wants, do you think the Flames try to move him and get something for him?
No, I don't think there's going to be a huge trade market. I mean, I just think... and, you know, it's a big thing for somebody to confidently say. I'm not saying, I just have a hunch, really. This is not me saying, this is just me saying that I just don't think it's going to happen.
He's been around long enough. If he was going to be on the NHL roster, he would be.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, it's a case where I just don't get the sense that Darryl is enamored with the particular player.
I think we still are figuring out who Peltier is, who Zary is, who Schwint is. I think by this point we know who Phillips is. And if it's a piece that would help them, they'd have him here.
I mean, generally, I don't know if you know what Phillips is, but I just think Darryl has had this impression of what Phillips is since he's gotten here, and I don't think that's necessarily changed. So it's not his call, ultimately. It's Brad's call, but...
Brad can bring him up, and Darryl cannot put him in the lineup.
That's right, yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. I would be willing to bet today that he doesn't play a game the rest of the year.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, but it's one of those where, like, if Phillips continually is dominating at the level that he is, I think that, like, in spite of, you know, like, preconceived notions, like, players can magically develop, look at Tag Thompson in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Like, he was garbage for up until the midpoint of last year. And then it's like, I'm going to be Mr. Superstar now. And, okay, cool.
Well, and do I think Phillips not being recalled has any impact on Jacob Pelche's trajectory or Matt Coronado's trajectory? No.
No.
0%. That's something that's really important to say.
I understand where both of you guys are coming from, and I feel like Brad is probably more enamored with Phillips than Darryl is. I think that's probably why he's still here. And I could see it getting to the point where Brad says, I'm bringing him up. Put him in a game, and, you know, Darryl says, fine, I'll put him in a game because you brought him up. And, you know, I think he will have to wow Darryl at that point.
Yep.
And I think that, to be fair, like, Darryl's said repeatedly, especially, like, earlier this season with Connor Mackey, like, if you're given an opportunity, you have to take advantage of it. And, you know, if the Flames recall Phillips or Peltier or whatever, it's like, okay, here's your shot, kid. Now it's up to you. If you want to stay here, you want ice time, that's up to you. And
as long as he's given a fair shot.
Yeah, and I think that Darryl's always been fair when players have come up. You know, like, at first, like, a lot of people were concerned about Goudreau when Darryl first came aboard, and, like, oh, well, because he's small, he won't play, and yet Goudreau had his best year of his career under Darryl. And I think that it's more incumbent on the player, and, you know, if you're good, you will play and you'll get all of that. It's just, you have to show it. And to their credit in the A, they're doing everything that they can to show that they're ready for the NHL. Whether that materializes or not, we'll see.
I think that's a pretty good way to sum it up.
I do too. Last AHL question for you guys. There is no home and away jerseys in the AHL. There is dark and light, and they switch them halfway through. What is your preference, white or red for the Wranglers? Let's start with you, Mike.
My preference is the one that's coming next year. But for now, I kind of dig.
Is that
the
your
red
way of
red.
Saying black?
There might be something coming next year. I think the shoulder logo, the very cool shoulder logo, will be featured very prominently.
That's the what is the profile of Blasty? The side.
I
version.
Like it a lot. It's really cool. I like it a lot.
And I think you know when you're saying something's coming next year, we knew these were rushed. I mean, we didn't see the jerseys until what, like a week before the season started. Like these, yeah. There was something going on there that delayed these.
Yeah, there was supply chain issues going on. They couldn't. They were debating playing with Flames jerseys on. Like wow. That was going to happen. If they didn't get them in time, they were going to play.
That happened back when
Flames
they were in St. John.
On.
They wore the Flames yeah. jerseys.
But, yeah, no, it's. I think the Wranglers did a really good job with their jerseys. I think the home and away, they're sticking around. I'm just saying there's going to be an alternate coming that's going to be pretty cool. I'm excited yeah. for it.
So
but
do
for
you
now,
prefer the red or the white?
The red.
Matt?
I think they're actually equally good for different reasons. It's just like the Flames regular jerseys. Like, the red jersey's awesome for being a red jersey, and the white jersey's awesome for being a white jersey. I like them both, and yeah, it's one of those where, you know, they didn't do a bad job with the overall design of the jersey, where, like, you know, some jerseys, like, Stockton's were kind of lousy. So, you know,
there's something about the red jersey when I see it, though. It's like the jersey and the pants are different shades and just doesn't look as uniform as it should.
True.
I also feel yep. like the red is too red. You need like a white Wranglers logo on it. It just, I don't know, it seems like it's a little too red.
You know what, I think they thought about the white W. I know this, they thought about the idea of doing a white W. It just didn't look as good. The red on red.
Maybe that's where you can get the yellow in there.
Maybe. Wouldn't that have been something? No kidding.
Well, it's interesting because for those fans that don't know, they want to sell both jerseys. The teams wear, what is it, Mike? They wear light at home for the first half?
Yes, that's right.
And then dark at home after Christmas.
Something like that. They actually wore the reds at home for a couple games last week, but yeah.
Okay. And how many AHL teams actually have alternate jerseys?
Can't be quite many. A lot.
Are there?
There's okay. a few. Yeah, AHL teams do a lot of like special event jerseys.
Yeah, not it's as many as the ECHL does with the weird. What was the game in the ECHL where they wore like Star Wars jerseys and all sorts of weird crap like that?
But, yeah, you see the
that
Darth American Vader. League. Yeah.
Stockton last year did a I think a Mexican Heritage night, okay. and they had a reverse retro night.
When we had the yeah. Wranglers in the ECHL, they did Cops and Robbers night.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. Yeah. So. There will be a lot of special stuff with the Wranglers coming for sure.
Awesome, yeah, and it's you know it's nice to see that the Flames fans in the city are embracing them. Mike, you've been there. From what I understand, they're mostly sold out. A lot of good atmosphere in the building. It seems like hockey fans are really enjoying having the AHL here.
Yep, it's been a good. It's been received well. The attendance has gotten a little bit better lately, and last game I was at was full. So yeah, it was a lot of
nice.
Fun.
Let's hope that we can make them stick around here longer than Edmonton did with the Roadrunners.
That's right.
Well, Mike, thanks for joining us this week. As always, you've been on the show a number of times. Always good to have you on. Always our good AHL correspondent. You can find Matt at, Mike at flamesnation.ca. You can find him at the Daily Faceoff. You cover the Flames. Are you? I know at one point you were covering the Wings. Are you covering any other teams right now?
No, Mike? not doing that anymore. That was a special assignment that I was on for a little bit. But yeah. Okay. No, I'm doing DFO stuff, Daily Faceoff, and working down in Okotoks at the AJHL. And
appearing
doing
on Coyotes
Calgary
podcast.
Yeah, just doing some random stuff. Calgary Dinos, dude, did the women's doubleheader over the weekend against the Huskies.
What'd you
that
do for
fun.
Them?
Did play-by-play. That
nice.
Was a lot of fun.
Okay,
yeah,
so
good.
People want to hear you call the Okotoks team. Where can they listen to you? Is that on the radio?
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Online I mean, stream? if they're on the road, listen to the Eagle 100.5, I think. That's the radio station. We also do our online streams on Hockey TV.
Awesome. Well, we always end the show by doing a prediction for the week. You know this. You've been on before. If you want to predict with us, you're welcome to. Last week, we didn't do so hot. I thought that the Flames would win against Florida and Montreal, lose to Washington. Matt thought they'd win in Washington, lose the other two, so neither of us got a point last week. We got four games on the schedule this week, though. We got two home games finishing off this homestand, Monday against Arizona, a typical 7 p.m. start time, Wednesday versus Minnesota, 6 p.m. start time, and then they've got a road back-to-back Friday and Saturday, at Columbus on Friday at 5 p.m. start time, and at Saturday, Toronto, the early Hockey Night in Canada game at 5 p.m. So, Mike, you're our guest. Why don't we let you predict the week first?
I think they're going to beat Arizona tomorrow, but I think it's going to be close. I think it's actually going to be a shootout game, and I think the final score is going to be 6-5.
Wow.
And then I think they're going to lose to Minnesota. I think they'll lose to Columbus. Then I think they'll beat Toronto.
Okay, so you think they'll win, sort of sandwich the wins this week?
Yeah.
Wins on either side.
Yeah.
Where do you think Vladar plays?
I think he should get three, but I think he's going to get two. I think he's going to get Arizona, and I think he'll get Toronto.
Interesting. All right, Matt, you're up.
I think he'll get three games this week, and it'll be everybody but Columbus. And I think the Flames will win against Arizona, Columbus, and Toronto. I think they'll drop the Wild game.
You know, Minnesota is one of those weird teams that they're often not a great team, but the Flames seem to struggle against them. Historically, yeah. The Flames have not seemed to do well against them. I think Dan Vladar is going to play three as well. I think he'll get Arizona. I think you're stupid not to put him against Arizona. I think he gets Minnesota. And I think you've got to put Markstrom in against Columbus just because I think Johnny's going to be out looking for revenge. But, see, it's one of those things. I don't know if I want Vladar. Yeah, okay, I'll put Vladar in Toronto. So I think Vladar plays Arizona, Minnesota, Toronto, unless Markstrom steals it in Columbus. As far as wins, I think Calgary has to... They got to beat Arizona, right? I mean, you can't not beat Arizona at this point. I think they're going to... What's that, Mike?
Arizona's a good offensive team right now. Chychrun's back. They're firing at all cylinders.
That's true. I think we're gonna win Arizona, win Minnesota. I think we lose in Columbus, and sadly, I think Johnny lights us up. And I think we're gonna lose Toronto because I think these guys might take their eye off the prize there. They still don't seem to do that in Toronto.
Yep, I think that's fair.
Yeah, the Toronto games always seem to be high scoring stupidity games.
They seem to be high scoring, but the last couple I can remember, it seemed like there was always both teams had a lapse of some kind. And it just seemed like they never played the way they should be.
I'm going to make a prediction, and I'm going to say Yusuf Alamaki has 2 points tomorrow for Arizona.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
There you go.
So, I mean, really, if you look at this, we got Valimaki coming in Arizona. We got Johnny and...
Good Branson.
Giordano.
Good Branson in Columbus. And then we got Gio in Toronto. So this could be a week of getting lit up by former Flames.
That's right.
Is there anybody in Minnesota that used to play here that we care about?
They used to have Cam Talbot, but not anymore. That's true. So I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. One of the few teams that doesn't have a former Flame.
Yep.
All right, well, Matt, do you want to take us out as you always do?
Well, as always, go Flames, go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.